Welcome to the Hook Podcast, episode 7. This episode is pretty cool. We got Jason Moyse, aka Trapman from Bermagui, on the show. So lock yourself in and enjoy episode 7.
Just one more.
What a fish.
Welcome to the Hook Podcast, mate.
Cool. Thanks.
So for all those people that are just joining in and listening to us, Jace and I were just having a chat before and Jace hasn't heard anything about podcasts before, so it was a bit funny. So, you know, we'll introduce you to the 21st century.
Rub it in. Thanks, mate.
It's all good, buddy. It's all good. So, obviously, for those that follow Facebook and Instagram, Jace is aka Trapman from Bermagui. He is an excellent source of information. Touch with Jace a fair bit whenever we're over the coast and we're looking like we're heading over. Jace is out on the water. What? How many days are you, mate?
I average about 250.
There you go. So the guy's out on the water. You're a commercial fisherman?
I am, yes.
Yep. And what do you mainly target, mate? So obviously most people that will be listening to this podcast will have seen you on Facebook or Instagram. But what is it that you actually do, buddy?
I do a various amount of different things with commercial fishing. I do a lot of trap fishing, which is pretty much my number one thing here. What I catch in traps is seasonal. Summertime, we have a lot of leather jackets. Autumn, we do all right with the moong, which is also known as deep sea bream, and snapper. And sometimes in the winter, like this winter, we do a lot of octopus, which is probably one in 4 years. These big giant octopus seem to get really thick. And yeah, so that's the trapping part of it. I also do a bit of gummy line fishing. I do some yellowfin fishing. I've got a small quota. A minor line license, which is a real permit to catch tuna, albacore, and yellowfin.
Yep.
And also do a fair bit of shark fishing for small bronzies and makos, and you get the odd bigger fish now and again.
Yeah, I was going to say the last couple of shark posts that I've seen you put up, there's nothing small about them, mate. So.
No, well, there's seemed to be a lot of big sharks around the last couple of years, and they're just getting bigger and thicker the way it's looking. It's really weird.
Yeah, okay. All right. Well, we might come back to that. But so the trapping, obviously you mentioned it there. You've got a quota. So how does that actually work, mate? So us recreational guys, we just rock up, buy a license to go fishing, and then we go out and catch pretty much whatever we're allowed to catch. Obviously, you guys are a lot heavily governed with what you do.
We are. I've got a lobster quota, which is I usually catch in about 5 weeks, and that's just a historical thing where we caught so many lobsters for a certain amount of years, and when they went to quota, they gave us the quota. That's one quota. We also got trip limits on shark fishing, on pelagic sharks, which is a limit of 500 kilos a week. That's all pelagic sharks, like bronzies and makos and et cetera. I usually don't keep the bigger sharks. They're not really financially worth it. They get a bit of ammonia and real strong taste about them, as most people who've probably tried big sharks know. The trapping, we're governed by the amount of traps we can use. So at the moment, my license allows me 30 traps, which is, it sounds like a lot, but the ocean's a big, wide place. And yeah, trying to keep the bait up to 30 traps is a big effort too, because if I do 4 days a week, I'm using about 500 kilos of bait minimum.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, the tuna is the yellowfin and albacore. That's all quoted. I only own a small bit of quota, but I usually try and lease some when I am catching them.
Yep.
And yeah, so there's lots of limits there. Different species have different catch amounts. I'm only allowed 50 kilos of certain species a day, and trip limits on pretty much every species except for things like kingfish and snapper. They're still all you can catch, but you know, the way fishing is, yeah, we've got weather and all that to deal with as well. So,
yep.
Yeah, but yeah, it's restricted as much as they can at the moment, but it looks like it's going to get a lot more restricted in the near future.
Yeah, right. Okay, well, that's obviously playing with your livelihood a fair bit there.
It is. I am lucky enough to have a lobster quota, which is, it's a big pickup every year, because that's a fishery that's fishing really well. And as some of my followers will probably see, I usually let a lot of lobsters go at the end of the season because I've obviously finished my quota, and you know, so it's nothing to put another half a ton back in the water of traps I haven't found, or when I get the quota a bit quicker than I expected. But yeah, it's the fishing's improving a lot of fish species actually because of the quota system. But there's some rules and regulations that they're talking about where we're only allowed to fish certain days a year, which is pretty ridiculous, which is something we're fighting at the moment.
Yeah, okay. So obviously, mate, having spoken to you and knowing you relatively well and having chats at the boat ramp, you come down from Sydney and move to Burmese. What was the driving factor for that one?
We'll call it a city escape, I guess, a country escape. Sydney, I grew up in Sydney. Dad fished in Sydney all his life, so I was second generation. The fishing in Sydney, I had it down pat because I'd done it all my life in Sydney. I knew all the reefs and I knew this and that. And, you know, my number one target was kingfish. And Sydney's just spoiled with the amount of kingfish that live there and the size of kingfish too. So, you know, that was my number one target there. But it just got really hard with the traffic. And because I lived in eastern suburbs, South Sydney area, I had to drive my fish all the way to Piermont Fish Markets every day. So you start work at 4 a.m. and then you get home at 4 p.m. or so, and then you got probably 3 hours, 4 hours drive because it's always peak hour at 5 o'clock. And it was just getting just no life at all, you know. You spend that much time in the water and then you got to drive all your stuff to the market. So, I was just looking for an escape to get away from the rat race and the traffic and the ships and, you know, the trucks and all that stuff. And my partner and me looked up and down the coast and, just remember driving the Burmese and thinking, oh, this is it. Because I actually did a few holiday trips here and I really liked it. Yeah, this is where we stuck and this is where we ended up. I think that was probably 9 years ago now. So, yeah, I've been here for a while now. I don't think I'm a local, but I'm doing my best.
Fair enough. So every time I've been over there, you're always busy, like trying to lock you down for the podcast. You've been absolutely flat out. And I know you put in some massive hours on the water. Like we've been over there, you know, we fish pretty hard as well. But I know you're up at the crack of dawn. And when we put in at the boat ramp, your boat's normally gone. And when we get back, there's some days where your boat ain't back either. So big days on the water.
Yeah. Not quite as big as you in recent trips, I must admit. I think you must have been battling a bit harder than usual and put a bit longer hours in. I don't know what's going on there, but yeah, I do put big hours in. You know, it's just part of the job. But summertime's tough here because we get a east coast of the nor'easters all the time. So you got a little work weather window in the morning till lunchtime, and then that sea breeze, as they call it, kicks in. So we get some early starts, and winter are long days, but they're short days, you know. Winter is a short day, but it's actually a long day on the water. So, you put the hours in, you get through the gear, and you know, your traps are baited and they're all working again. So it's, you know, it's just part of the job, I guess.
What's your favorite stuff to fish for? So if you could get rid of everything else and just fish for the one thing, what do you reckon it'd be?
Oh, it's hard. In Sydney, I used to love kingfish. Kingfish and jewfish were just the pinnacle, you know. It was something I had, as I said, down pat, and I had so many places and reefs that I used to fish and loved to fish. But it's a big toss-up between them and yellowfin, because I really love yellowfin fishing. It's something about cubing all day and having fish around your boat, and, you know, them days are they're few and far between these days. But, yeah, the yellowfin cubing was probably one of my favourite fisheries to do.
Well, we've fished the Canberra yellowfin comp for the last 4 years, I think it is. And every time we come over, we always touch base with you and everything like that. But the yellowfin fishery over there has been really hard over the last couple of years. Like, it's starting to come back a little bit more. It looks like they've had a really good run of yellowfin on the East Coast this year. But
it's not what it used to be. And there's a lot of reasons for that. You know, we can call the commercial fishing, we can call the wrecks, you know, when the yellowfin was thick around Montague Island. Nothing be 100 boats there all cubing for yellowfin. And, you know, it's a lot of pressure on big fish when the fish are averaging 60, 80 kilos.
Yeah.
But as I say, this year from the Gold Coast all the way down to as far as Bateman's, didn't quite make it this far, the water. But, yeah, there's been an amazing run of yellowfin and big fish too. And, you know, Rex and the commercial guys have been doing really well, and there's been tons and tons of fish crashing on the surface, which is good to see. So there is a lot of pressure elsewhere with purslane boats, not Australian boats, up in Indonesia getting a lot of juvenile fish. So that's a big fishery that, and it's all a filter effect. So we'll feel effects of these giant purse boats wiping out entire schools of big eye and yellowfin. You know, it's obviously it's juvenile fish, and that's a filter effect. Same with the striped tuna. They're nothing like they used to be either. And you know, you can only take so much out of the water before it starts to show. And yeah, I think a lot of tuna fisheries, except for bluefin, is making a major comeback. There's just a little bit of pressure starting to show.
Yeah. Yeah. So our recent episode, we had Al McGlashan on the podcast, and he was really interesting to talk to. In like he spoke a lot about the relationship between the commercial guys and the rec guys. Obviously, you know, I've been over there and, you know, help you find your traps and stuff like that. Do you have much of an issue with the rec guys? Like, is there really that much of an us and them sort of thing? Or do you find, because you've got your Facebook stuff and everything, most people are pretty good? Or what's, you know, as a professional fisherman, like you're doing it 250 odd days a year, what's your general feel for the rec versus...
Mate, you only have to go on Facebook and see some of the dribble. You know, it's and I mentioned Al McGlashan, and you know, he's been a bit guilty of some things I've seen him put up and thinking, well, where are you coming from, Al? He's, you know, it's just the pro bashing and the finger pointing can be pretty hurtful and pretty nasty. And, you know, some of it's probably got fact, but you know, it is tough. Facebook can be tough when you see some of the stuff put on by certain big names when it comes to commercial fishing. But personally, since I've moved to Birmingham, since we've done the Trapman thing, it's been amazing. A lot of people don't understand the side of commercial fishing, which is the major reason I did the page, to sort of bridge that gap between commercial and pro fishermen, you know, just to show, you know, we can all work together and there's enough fish in the ocean for everyone. We're all quoted. We've all got licenses. We all got size limits. We all got catch limits. You know, there is a place for both fisheries, and there has to be. Like, people come to this town in Birmingham and want to try a local fresh fish, and you're not going to travel. You might come here to go fishing, but a lot of families come here just to see the place. And I get so many messages saying, oh, we love Birmingham, we always go there, we always try the local fish, and it's great. You know, we need both. We need the commercial fishermen for the local restaurants that need the wreck fishermen in little towns like this for the business, you know. And it can all work together. And since I've opened the page and since I've opened a few eyes, apart from a few standard Facebook trolls, which you just can't get away from.
Yep.
You know, it's worked out really good. I get some great messages and personal messages, which is just like, wow, it's amazing. I'm actually really surprised in how much people are interested in watching my page, actually. It's quite surprising.
Well, mate, look, we, you know, I've been following you since you pretty much started, or since we found the page anyway. And as a rec guy, you know, having someone like yourself that's out there every day fishing, you know, that's just a valuable source of information for someone like myself. And then, you know, having to drag a boat 12 hours up the East Coast to get up there, you know, we want to try and make our time worthwhile, and being able to tap into someone like yourself, you know, not being able to ring you and have a chat, but just see what you're putting on Facebook, that it's all, you know, it's all real-time information. So that helps. But I think the big one too is just seeing some of the stuff that you get to see out on the water, mate. Like, most people would be really, really envious because they don't understand the hours and the work that go into it. You know, they just see the dolphins or the whales that you get to see. And then, like,
and today, the nice, pretty calm sunrises. I usually leave the ones out where we're hanging onto the dear life trying to get out for the bar. But yeah.
Yeah, those ones, you know. So,
and the pretty stuff up.
Yeah. But even today, like, I seen the post you put up of the Mako free jumping and stuff. That was just cool, mate. Like, I've seen them jump when they're hooked up at the back of the boat and everything. But, you know, just cruising along and being able to see that sort of stuff would be pretty spectacular, I think.
Yeah, no, well, I get a lot of that. You know, I get a lot of messages saying, oh, this is a great page and we love seeing this stuff and we never see this stuff. It's amazing to see what happens on the ocean. I guess because I've grown up on there, I take it a bit for granted, and I still get a bit of a thrill when you get dolphins and that around the boat. It's really weird, a bit childish really. But, yeah, and when I post it, people just love it. They just, you know, and I think it's good to show people, you know, this isn't exactly National Geographic. It's a bit down to earth and done through a Samsung with a cracked screen, but it still comes out all right, you know.
No, it does, mate. And it's a credit to you. It's you know, you're definitely bridging that gap, like you said, and having someone that is like, having met you and had a chat to you and got to know you now, like, you are very, very down to earth. And having something like that just to have a chat to or bounce ideas off. I know when we were over earlier this year, Chase and Marlon, like, we were hurting, mate. And just having someone like yourself being able to get a direction or a starting point, at least point us in a direction where we're not burning all that fuel trying to chase stuff, it helps.
Yeah. That wasn't really the original thing with Trapman. It wasn't really to help people with fishing reports in Burmy itself. It was more to, you know, there was a lot of clamp down on commercial fishing, and I got all this information in my head, which I don't usually share because, you know, fishermen are like secretive and shit like that.
I get it.
My missus at the time said, you know, well, if commercial fishing, you know, turns crap, if all this government stuff turns out to be bad, you need something else to fall back on. And you got all this knowledge in your head and you should be sharing it, you know. And I actually haven't done a lot. I've done a tuna video, how to catch yellowfin tuna or how to troll for yellow for tuna in general. And that was there was a fair bit in that, and people actually got that video. I don't know how many we sold a couple of hundred at least, which was surprising. Yeah, a lot of them people wrote back to me saying, oh, mate, all that stuff on your video you made was awesome. It's helped me out, and which is good. But the thing you were saying earlier about the reports and that, it wasn't the idea of Trapman wasn't to do reports for Burmy itself, for the town, but I just got hundreds of messages a day. Oh, what's going on here? Literally hundreds. My phone was just exploding with all this stuff. And I'm just going to have to write a report, you know, because people are desperate. And, you know, I get there's other pages here that have reports, but, you know, you've got to watch your wording because, you know, I know there's local businesses that have to have people to survive. Yeah. But as you say, you're driving 12 hours. You don't want to come all the way here on a report that's like, and you know, most businesses in town, obviously 99% of businesses in town actually think I promote really well and do them all favors. I try my best. A lot of people are saying, oh, we're driving 9, 10, 12 hours and we come here and the fishing's dead. Because we read it on Facebook, it was great. No, fishing changes from day to day, obviously. Yep. But I think fishing shit, I'm just going to say it's shit.
Yeah.
And why not?
Well, yeah, I think, and that's one of the awesome things about your page, mate. Like, it is down to earth. It's told how it is. It's easy to read. I mean, I had a look at some of your posts that you've put up tonight and yesterday and things like that. And, you know, it's straightforward. You don't have to learn how to read weather charts and all that sort of stuff, which...
You just have to learn how to work out some of my spelling at times. So that's about it.
Mate, I've got the same problem. Don't worry about that. Like, but yeah, I mean, it's awesome, buddy. And the other thing that I've noticed too, with you mentioned it, that you give back to the actual community there in Burmy. I've seen you've been doing a fair bit with Marine Rescue. You raffled off some of those shark jaws and things like that, which we didn't win, which I was a bit disappointed about, but hey, anyway. So yeah, I mean, but it's...
Actually, that wasn't a raffle. That was an auction. So you obviously just didn't put enough on them.
Well, I just thought, you know, you were going to hook me up, but clearly I was. So, yeah, I mean, you're obviously doing a lot for the community there. And I think you're downplaying your Facebook and your Twitter following a fair bit, to be honest, mate. Like, we're down here in Melbourne and people always talk about your page. So, yeah, it's a credit to you.
That's good to hear. I mean, sometimes I get messages from people from England, Canada, and all over the world, which is like, whoa. I mean, I only got 50. When you think all over the world, it's like such a huge number, but I've only got 55,000 followers, I think, on Facebook. But it's a wide place. There's a lot of people out there from different parts of the world just like to see the stuff, let alone, you know, don't really thrive on fishing reports. They just like to see the ocean life and what goes on in some commercial fishermen's lives, and the good and the bad. I mean, I try and keep it good, but there's obviously bad involved as well.
Oh yeah,
the following is awesome. It's awesome.
Let's touch on some of the bad. So how's the boat going, buddy? Like, last time I was over there, you were having a few issues. Is she up and running? Is everything all sorted?
Yeah, well, last year I wanted to sink it. It was just massive engine issues. I actually had engine issues for about 3 years, and I won't say the breed of engine, but it was just an absolute bugger. So I had to bite the bullet last year and put a new engine in. Yeah, it was a pretty tough time of year too, because the fishing was great and the boat wasn't going for like a month and a bit, and it was like, this is crazy. But yeah, I bit the bullet, put an engine in, and it's been going good ever since, which is good. I've had a few little, you know, you get hiccups, a few hydraulics and stuff like that. It's a working boat, you know. It does a lot of work and does a lot of hours and does a lot of miles, so you're always going to break. It's a boat, and you break shit on boats, don't you? So, you know, that's yep. what happens. But yeah, the last 12 months has been awesome. I just actually looking at my diary there. It was this time last year when the motor blew up and I had to get a new one. So touch wood somewhere here. Yeah, 12 months has been good and the fishing's been good. So yeah, no complaints. But yeah, it was a tough time. It's, you know, fishing's up and down, seasons and weather, and you got so many aspects. Your whole life, it's like a farmer, but I think it's a little bit different when you're fishing, because you know, if it's raining, you still get work a farm. If it's windy, you can still work a farm. You can't here. You can't as a commercial fisherman. You're stuck at home. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
So also, obviously, electronics. We're massive into our Simrad gear. I love my Evo 3 and my S double 500 and all the good stuff. I've got all the toys on the boat. So I know you put the Simrad on it, and the screenshots that you're putting up are awesome. And once you learn,
I got all the gear and no idea. All them numbers you just shot at me, I'm guessing it's the same as mine, but I can't remember them. I can use the gear. It's awesome. I was very lucky with the Simrad mob. Contacted a few commercial fishermen, and they saw me page, and they wanted people up and down the coast. There's another bloke in Sydney and another bloke in Victoria somewhere, and a few others doing the mapping for him. So I just record, have little obviously memory cards, and just continuously do mapping of Burmy and all the areas, all the reefs and that. So the more, obviously it's like a 3D mapping, so the more you go over it, the more like contour and the more
accurate.
Obviously accurate, because yeah, big word, accurate. Cruise at 8 o'clock at night. So yeah, the more I go out and the more I record, the more accurate it is. And they're actually going to give that out to the public in the near future. I've been mapping for nearly 2 years now. And you know, they sent me a message the other day. I've done so many thousand kilometer square meters and stuff. It was massive. But yeah, it's going to show some reefs that people didn't even know exist off here. Because, you know, when you spend that many days in the water and just potting around, you just find rocks and reefs and stuff. And I know a few of the trawler too, a lot of the trawler boys here. And I've got a lot of marks and stuff that they've found over the years. So yeah, I can't wait to get the actual mapping once it's finished and see for myself. It's going to be unreal. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah, definitely. So obviously, you know, you've been in the industry a long time, so you would have seen a lot of change with electronics. It's only getting better and better. And I mean, that's going to filter out to the commercial guys and to the rec guys.
Yeah.
And everything. So it's definitely.
I remember Dad's code and being an old paper sounder with a little needle on it going. Shh, shh, shh,
shh. Yeah. Yeah. My dad had the exact same one. Yep. So
he's actually got some stuff from the 60s, early 60s in the roll that's been used, obviously, and it's off the famous fishing place called the Peak. And the schools of kings on this sounder is like, oh, make it dribble. It's amazing stuff.
So if you were right into the kingies up in Sydney, how come you still don't target them down there in Burmese? Like, obviously, Montagu still gets its fair share of kingies. We've done well at the island there when we've been up there. So why not still target them?
It's a total different world down here. The kingies in Sydney, I'd have 50, 60 different places where you can go and get them from, like, Palm Beach as far down as Cronulla, like different reefs and that. And yeah, Sydney's a place where the fish are residential. The fish are always there and the fish always come back there, and the fish are, you get a good run of fish, 8 kilo, 12 kilo. You know, back in the 90s, we were catching 20, 30 kilo fish all the time. It was nothing.
Yeah, right.
But you come to Burmese, when I first got here, I was driving around, like, geez, these reefs are beautiful. They've got a whole kingfish, but the kingfish just aren't there. They love Montagu. They have little spurts here and there along the coast, but the grounds here look perfect for kingfish, but they just don't hold them. I think it's a funny place, the South Coast. The kingfish come through in a big wave. They're like traveling through and they'll hold up and then I'll continue on, where Sydney was just, there was always some place I could find them. They were always going to be in one of these places, you know, I just call them residential fish. It's just a complete different fishery. I know Eden had kingfish for a long time and they still do. They're really tough to catch now, but there's plenty there. Yeah. But Burmese is a bit funny. Montague is always going to be consistent with kings, but then, you know, they are a small run of fish, you know, 3 or 4 kilo fish sort of average. If someone gets a 10 kilo one, it makes the newspaper, you know, that's what it's like. So, you know, I did 3 or 4 years of kinging in between the traps, because I actually got a small tinny, which I go kinging fishing in and do other things in. But I just haven't done it the last few years. It's just the seals and the traffic, and it's just like, just like being in Sydney. I'm not going to do it. I'm going to do my own thing, you know. So
yeah,
that's why I don't target kingies here. It's just not consistent enough to make a living out of. That's for sure.
Fair enough. All right. Well, that brings us then into the shark stuff. I know I've noticed on your posts, whenever you put in some video of the sharks, you seem to get a lot more hits on that sort of stuff than some of your other stuff. Would I be pretty
People
fair?
People love sharks. They're crazy over sharks. It's crazy.
I think
they love them dead or alive too, which is really sad. But I let a lot of sharks go. I let probably 80% of our sharks we catch, we get let go. Like if we got a law, if we catch a live mako, we got to let it go. Like if it's a catch that's alive and green, we got to let them go by law.
Yep.
We try not to target big sharks, but we obviously catch big sharks and. You know, all the tigers and that, we generally let 99% of the tigers go because they're just not worth it. But yeah, it's, people just love them, and they are. The more you look at them, they are amazing. They never get old. Put it that way.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, obviously being a fisherman, we get to see them at the back of the boat swimming around, and there's something awe inspiring about them. Like just seeing them there, how, you know, one minute you're looking out the back of the boat at a burley bucket and just sort of having a chat. Next thing you feel a burley bucket move and it's like they just appear from nowhere. They're unbelievable creatures. And to see them live and in the water, you can watch it on David Attenborough or Trapman's Post, but unless you actually see it, it's just chalk.
Yeah, and makos, they are all inspiring to look at, especially live and especially, as you say, in the water. They're probably the closest shark to see that's very similar to a great white. I think makos are obviously a lot more pretty because of the colour, being my favourite colour, blue. But, yeah, once you see a great white, it's a whole different thing. The size, you know. I haven't seen a lot of monster great whites here, but I definitely saw a couple of things in Sydney that was just like, you know, as round as a V-dub. It was just enormous things. But they are all inspiring. They are just like, you know, what do you eat? Look at the size. It's crazy.
Well, it was interesting looking at your post there that you put up about the mako and obviously the juvenile dolphins and stuff like that in them. So obviously they're pretty healthy, the old sharks.
Yeah, they are. I mean, that could have come across the dead dolphin. Who knows? But I got a few other pictures there where I've pulled full-grown dolphins out of sharks. Usually it's they're quite digested and it's just like the skull usually holds together good on a dolphin. It's crazy that I know that. That's how many dolphins I pulled out of sharks over the years. But, yeah, they definitely feed on them. They definitely, they don't muck around. And mako's been the fastest shark and one of the fastest fish in the ocean. You would have put it past them catching a dolphin for sure.
Yeah. Well, so what do you reckon the biggest one is that you've had at the back of the boat? Not including a great white, because obviously that thing I would assume is going to trump pretty much everything. But
we're talking a mako, or are we talking
All right, let's go on mako. What do you reckon the biggest one is?
Feel well over 500, well over, just ridiculous.
Right,
just there was definitely one in Sydney when I was cubing for yellowfin once, and yeah, we literally left the trail and got away from it. It was horrendous. It was a big mako. Definitely seen plenty and caught plenty around that 300 mark, but that one stands out definitely. I couldn't even put a number to it. I remember talking to a longliner once who actually got one. This is going back 15 years, 20 years ago. They got one tangled up on the longline. It got wrapped up in the tail. They had a boom that was rated to lift 600 kilos. And they got this shark halfway up before, you know, the winch gave up and they couldn't get it. They got three quarters in the boat and just couldn't get that head over.
Yep.
And the boom and mast gave up. You know, they definitely get big. I'd hate to know how big that one was, but they actually could not land it.
Yeah, right.
But, I've definitely seen one that was, considering the biggest one I've landed, which was tangled up in a rope, it's 380, round about that. And this other one pretty much dwarfed it. So, yeah, I would say 500. Yeah. I reckon I've seen tigers ridiculously 800 plus. They're just massive, like massive things.
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, you've put up recently some video of a tiger that you had at the side of the boat and all that sort of stuff, and it looked big. So
yeah. Yeah, it's definitely a lot of consistency in 300 kilo tigers, I fear. It's amazing. Even midwinter, we're getting tigers this year. Not targeting them, but they were just there, you know, just eating everything and being real pains in the butt, actually. But
so without giving it away, like sort of how deep are you talking when you're shark fishing? Obviously, does each shark or species of shark sort of sit in its own depth? Is there a sort of, can you, you know, obviously you're trying to target a certain species of shark. So does that help knowing that they're in a certain depth or they're in a certain location? Or
one of the best factor of shark fishing with me is the moon. It's a week before the full and a week after the full seems to be like they just go nuts. But sometimes they go too nuts and eat each other. But yeah, definitely the moon. The other day we had to go at the 6 mile, which is one of your favorite spots.
Yep. Yeah, yeah.
And we got played by blue sharks and we got played by tiger sharks, you know, and then I tried the 12 mile and we got tiger sharks and a couple of big bronzies. So there's no real place set time for sharks to be where they are. They just seem to be there. I've never really found, obviously water temperature with makos is pretty important. We get them 100 kilo and under in water. That's like, once you get that 18 degrees, they seem to fizzle out a bit and you just get them real odd monster one.
Yeah.
This is sort of on the edge of the shelf. But, yeah, there's no real – I haven't seen any real pattern. Just the only real obviously pattern is the moon phase. And that goes pretty much for even gummy sharks. I just love the full moon. It's just awesome.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that because we noticed that this year when we're over chasing the marlin and everything. Leading up to the full moon, like we'd fished 9 days straight and hadn't turned a reel. Yeah. And then coming into that full moon, a day before the full moon and the day of the full moon, like, you know, we got eight in 1 day and everything, and it just fired. And then it sort of stayed consistent the day after the full moon, but then it just dropped right off again. So, you know, I was never a real big believer in that sort of stuff, but clearly there's something to it. And the more commercial guys and guys that are out there doing it, they all say the similar sort of thing.
Longliners just froth on the moon. They love it, you know, for all everything. You know, big eye, broadbill, especially broadbill, yellowfin, but you know, they're just leading up to the full moon, they just, you know, start rubbing their hands together going, "Hey boys, here we go."
Yeah, right.
Yeah, it's just a total different world. I even find that the trapping, it's funny because the trapping always really goes good leading up to the full moon and just after, especially if you've got a bit of current at the same time. Definitely the trapping is a dead giveaway, you know, leading up to the full moon. It's like, you know, you're always going to catch a lot more fish or whatever. Darker the moon, you just think, oh, where the hell are these fish, you know, and you put the GoPro down and there's snapper everywhere. But they're just not in that feed mode. And I think a lot of times, especially snapper, that they'll be there, they won't trap, but you can catch them red hot on fishing lines like rod and reel.
Yep.
I think they have to be, because this is a big, dirty, big, filthy metal cage with a bit of bait in the middle of it, you know. Not every fish is that dumb just to go in unless they're really, really hungry or something's teeing them up like a moon. And I had a lot of mates in Sydney that used to fish like right up against me traps. They'd anchor up current of it and fish towards back towards it. And they'd be bagging out and snapper and Moe's and Trevally and, oh, you're going to smash it in that trap and pull out. Not a fish. It's just like a burly tractor.
Yeah.
And that happens a lot. It's either if I'm catching lots, the amateurs are catching not much. If they're catching lots, I'm catching absolutely nothing. That's just how it works. And the GoPro I put down in places has really opened my eyes to that because I put it down in certain moon phases, darker the moon and that, and I'll have the GoPro stand baited and all the jackets and all the or the ship fish will come in, and you look in the background, you see these big, like big snapper just like cruising, and you know, it's probably 5-10 meters off the bottom, just cruising past, not even interested. You have a beautiful stripey fillet there, not even interested. And other times you put them in and they're all in your face, bang bang, smashing the bait. So
yeah, right.
And that's always in a moon phase too, like leading up to that full moon, they're always aggressive. And yeah, there is a lot to it. Moons can be feast or famine too. So they can be just like the deadest. I think there's not even a fish in the ocean sometimes too. That happens now and again. But yeah, I think 9 times out of 10 are leading up to that moon's good for most things in the ocean for sure.
Yeah, it's yeah. The more I think about it, the more I look at it, you know, the more we fish, the more I'm starting to pay attention to it. And we've started keeping a diary, which is something that I've never, ever done before. But as we get more and more into our fishing, I think it's you know, it's something that you've got to do.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Another funny thing about the moon, because I was an avid kingy fisherman for, 25 years or something, and we used to, you know, always use live bait, live squid, live mackerel and that. You'd always struggle to get live bait in the moon.
Yep.
For some reason, I don't know if it's like, oh, this is a scary time, we're not gonna. Yeah. And talking to some longliners, they struggle too. Like, you know, when they're trying to purse seine their live bait up and down the coast, and they struggle to find bait too in a full moon too. So there's definitely something to it.
Yeah, yeah.
Bait fish obviously think there's something going on here, boys. It's hide, you know, until this moon goes out.
Yeah, everything with teeth wants to eat us.
That's right.
Yeah, it's you're right, mate. That I suppose you. Being out on the water, you're going to get to see more frequent and understand it more, whereas us wreck guys, we're only out there, you know, maybe 50, 60 days a year, depending on how much you got to work to pay the bills to put fuel in the boat. But, you know, it's there's definitely a lot to it. And people, you know, I've got mates at work that I hang out with and they're like, oh, yeah, it's just luck. It's just luck. But it's not. The guys that win tournaments – guys that have to put food on the table, there's no luck to it. They know exactly where the stuff is, when to be there, what to use, how to get it, and they get the job done.
They're saying that there is no exact science too, but there is, you can get close because, you know, you've got a lot of other factors with water temperatures, currents and stuff too. So, yeah, there's a lot to factor in, but you do get a hang for the like the moon phases, the time of year, the month, the water temps and that. If it all in lines, you'll do really well. But, yeah, it's never an exact science, but you can get close enough to definitely improve your catch, that's for sure.
Yeah. So what's the future for Trapman, mate? What's the plan going forward for here? What is the next big goals for yourself?
Quite scary, actually. We've got a few things happening with our film crew in the near future from America, which will be quite interesting. We've already signed the contracts for that, which will it's totally out there for me, that's for sure.
Is it are we allowed to spill the beans on it now?
No. Yeah. Another contract. No.
Now but, yeah, it's intrigued. Come on, buddy.
No, it's a big American company. A lot of people watch their programs and that, but yeah, no, it should be it'll be interesting. I think a couple of weeks filming with me. They want to sort of base it on sharks, but I think it's going to go a little bit further than that. But yeah, it's happening this year, so that'll be interesting. I can't say much, but I probably said too much. Who freaking knows? But yeah, that's the near future. The far future, who knows? I really don't look into it or think of it that much. Always too busy with commercial fishing to really, as you know, it took you months to try and get hold of me and just do this. So. Yeah, life's pretty busy, but yeah, that's the near future thing. But after that, who knows?
No, awesome, buddy. Well, look, I really appreciate you jumping on the podcast. I'll send you the link of our Hook podcast after this, so you can actually see what it's all about.
Yeah,
and yeah, we'll get it out there. But look, mate, really, really appreciate your time. Your webpage and your Facebook page and your Twitter page are awesome, especially from a wreck point of view. It's one of the Facebook pages that I definitely look for whenever I log on to Facebook and just to see how it's cracking and what you're up to. Yep. So hats off to you, mate. I hope everything keeps tracking really well. We're going to be over there at this stage, it looks like January. So, So hopefully catch up with you for a beer and one of those lobsters that you keep talking about.
January is the time for it.
Yeah. Well, you know, so just remember we helped you find those pots that day. You know, I'm just throwing it out there.
I'm pretty sure they weren't mine, but anyway.
I think they were. Pretty sure they were. But anyway.
All good.
So, yeah, mate, look, stay safe out on the water. Keep those posts coming. You know, it's definitely something that we look for. And, yeah, I hope the contract, and I'm excited to see what it is now. You've got me really intrigued. So,
I'm not doing a special film with The Rock or anything, just in case you think it's that big. So,
damn it. So, look, mate, really, once again, really appreciate you being on the show, and look forward to catching up with you really soon. And stay safe out on the water, buddy.
All right, buddy. Thank you very much.